Pulling up Slink Tech Show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. This is issue... Guys, do we know what issue this is? Like 21, right?
20.
20? Anyway, it's really, really up there, and of course, we're so happy about that we know actually which number it is. Anyway, what we're going to do right now is take a quick break, listen to our promo, make sure that you take just a moment to get yourself signed on to IRC chat so you can chat back and forth with us when we're talking tonight. You do that by pointing your favorite chat client to our server, which is the linuxlink.net, and joining us on channel Pound Tech Show. And we'll get back to you in just a minute.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product. Or, why don't they talk about this? Or, maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have. And perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, Dan cutting in here. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux users group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal of Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together.
And we're back. Hi again, this is Link on the Linux Link Tech Show. This is our February 18th, 2004 edition. Welcome, welcome, and I hope you're listening. If you are listening, please take a moment to join us on the IRC channel so we can chat back and forth and hear you, and you can pick up all of our wonderful little links and things that go along. We're experiencing a couple of technical difficulties tonight, mostly because we're all a little bit out of sync here, and so if the volume is a little too loud or something like that, please do us a favor and give us a shout on IRC, and we'll see if we can get things rectified and running smooth. Other than that, happy February 18th. We need to introduce our the other host of the show. That's Dan Washko over there that just howdy at you. And we also have Alan Metzler.
Hello,
Alan.
Everyone. Playing cool. Around with the levels again.
Yeah, we're all here playing around with the levels. We've had some slight equipment problems, so we're not exactly in the groove of things yet today, but we'll get there, I'm sure. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, or at least I have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Most notably, my adventures or misadventures with a nice little Linux distribution called Debian, but I'll get to that in a few minutes. Right now, I'd like to open the topic of conversation up to the news. Anybody have some news? Good news? Good news is good news?
Good news. Well, I got one. Supposedly, they had found the first bug from the leaked Windows code.
Oh, yes.
It allows an attacker to gain control over a user's computer by using a specially crafted bitmap file when loaded if you're using IE5.
Ooh, this is going to play havoc with the porno sites, huh?
I was going to say, yeah, they're going to have a great time with this one.
That's funny.
It was uncovered because of that code leak of last week, so.
Right, and that code leak was, Windows 98 and 2000, right? Somebody leaked them out?
Yeah, 2000. I don't know if it was MT, or ME, excuse me, was involved with it. But I think it was 98, 2000 at least.
I heard that story last week, and I thought to myself, you know, what exactly would you want to do? You know what I mean? With that code, but I guess, you know, the application has thus far presented itself. If you want to write a virus, there it is. You know?
It's all ready for you.
Gives you something. They can't do that whole security by obscurity thing if somebody releases a source code.
Well, hopefully it'll force them to fix some of their security problems. I don't think so, but it would be nice if it did.
No, that's never going to happen. It's never. Well, it's entirely possible that like some open source programmer would grab a hold of the source code and fix some things and release a patch, but that's not going to happen because real open source programmers, of course, don't use Windows.
Well, that's true there, but it's also if you're coding for open source,
they don't use Windows. How dare you?
Everybody uses Windows. If you're coding for open source, though, you wouldn't want to look at that source code at all.
Right.
It'd just be dangerous if you went out there and got a popular application and you had looked at some of the Windows source code.
Sure.
I'm sure they'd come down on you with lawyers aflame.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what else is going to happen? This is going to open up a whole other SCO/Linux lawsuit because now it's going to be Microsoft and Linux. And somewhere down the road, they're going to say, oh, well, you know, Linux has this wonderful code for, I don't know, Samba services or something like that that they stole from the release source code from Windows.
But that wouldn't be going after Linux. That would be going after Samba.
Well, yeah, but the same is for any application.
Same thing.
Yeah, if you wrote
same thing.
Same thing.
Same thing.
But it's another window for them to complain about something, you know. How about you, Dan? You hear any wonderful news? Have you caught up to yourself over there yet?
I'm still messing around with trying to get a fix.
Doing wonderful news. Laptops over there.
Wow.
Yeah, Dan's got this like, I'm sitting here and I can see in front of me like my laptop, and then there's this giant pile of laptops and wires, and Dan's hair sticking above that. So
I don't have anything right now. Soddy Potty, new Soddy Potty was just released.
Soddy Potty. And Soddy Potty is what exactly?
A vector-based drawing application.
Those people who don't know.
That's what I used to make that little ocean scene the last time.
Yeah.
That's really
that,
nice.
And that was really cool in a fourth grade sort of way, yeah.
Hey, come on. Right.
I just said, did you post that yet?
Huh?
Did you post that presentation up on the web somewhere?
No, not yet. Staying true to my...
Staying true to your procrastination scheme.
Procrastination, yes.
It's just like me. Well, I've been doing a lot of that lately, too, but... I've been having a lot of fun playing around and trying to get Debian running. Debian, before they beat me up. Debian running, too. But I did want to mention a couple of things that I saw roll by in the news recently. One of them I'm sure I saw today, and it was an article, but I can't find it, of course. It was an article about it's the current SCoV Linux trial thing going on. And I guess what happened is SCoV posted this date, like they were going to sue a Linux user. And this was like 3 months ago, and the date has come and passed, and they haven't sued anybody. And they've also been ordered to give examples of the code that they feel has been stolen and stuff. And what has happened is that some people have found out that this code that supposedly... Linux is reusing is actually code that IBM contributed, and is it IBM or Novell? I'm getting the story wrong, people, but what it amounts to is either IBM or Novell like contributed this code directly from AT&T unit, or it's some of their code that they contributed, which was derived from the old AT&T Unix that they got. And SCoV's big beef about this was that SCoV thinks that they own all the AT&T Unix and its derivatives. However, somebody found a memo from AT&T after all this licensing business was done way back in 85, 86?
Something like that, yeah.
Where they said, AT&T said specifically that it's only the AT&T code that was getting passed along, and that any of the derivative code belonged to the people who developed it. So, therefore, IBM does indeed have the rights to distribute whatever they developed, you know, past that original AT&T code as their own, and which kind of makes the whole lawsuit against the Linux people moot. But we'll have to see what happens with that. I really wish that I could find that article again, because it was really cool. And if somebody does find it, please stick it right up on the IRC so we can check it out. And the other thing that I was looking at was, and the other thing I can actually find, but I have to look at it.
Yeah, I just pumped it over from Slashdot.
What's that?
The article off Slashdot. I think this is the one you're talking about.
But the article about the
IBM portion
thing.
Of the code.
Cool.
There.
Cool. All right. Well, everybody, like, check that thing out. And the other thing I was talking about was the. Something.
Just went blank again.
I'm just having that kind of day. You know,
Link has been phasing in and out today.
It's one of those days I call a Chong day, right? Like Cheech and Chong, you know? Chong's sitting there going, yeah, man, yeah, I know Santa Claus. I played with that cat once. And
Dave's not here, man.
Yeah, right. No, Santa Claus, he's not a musician. Yeah, man, I dig that because that cat didn't know anything. You know?
Yeah, that's
the kind of day I've been having today. Just like 5 degrees off the center from the rest of the world, and I just can't figure out why. And I mean, I even took a nap before. I'm getting old. I took a nap before I came over here just so I could try and straighten myself out again, and that didn't work either.
All you youngins in here. I think I'm the oldest of y'all here.
Yeah. Alan's 12.
I wish I was 12 again.
We're all a bunch of script kiddies.
You know, I wish... What the hell? I can't...
And that's the show for tonight, folks.
Thank you very much for listening. Dan has just woken up.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm trying to figure this out, because I'm trying to find that stupid article.
I'm trying to figure out what the heck's going on here.
And what the heck is going on?
I can no longer connect to my airport with my laptop for some reason. It's just such a funky thing. I don't know what Apple did with their firmware.
Did something else fall off the wireless card?
You know, that could very well be the problem, but... I mean, I'm getting a connection now, but now I'm not getting DHCP through. It's dog slow, and it just ticks me off.
And this is like just the very bare edge of the hardware problems we're having today. We've
managed to crash the server.
Yeah, that's right, crash the server. We've had a 45-minute diatribe about getting V-Sound going today and all kind of stuff. But I remembered what the other news story I was going to mention was. However, I cannot get on the slash dot right now to read it off to you. Go there again. Go there by yourself and check it out. Hopefully sometime tonight when you listen to this or look at the previous days if you're listening to the show tomorrow. It's an article about all the free or all the CD-based Linux distributions that are out.
Oh, yes, I saw that one.
And I just happened over this before I headed over here today. And my Lord, the list is huge, man. It's like...
I read that during lunch today, and I hadn't realized there was that many different...
I never in a million years thought that they had that many CD-based... And these are like distributions that run on a CD, like Gentoo, right? Or like Gentoo, like Nopix. They're all, you know, it's a CD based. I can't even get on Slash. I'm getting 503s off of it. Fisher site, man.
Yeah, I just got the same thing. Okay.
But yeah, there's an article on there, and we will. Hopefully, someone can get on Slash dot before the show is out. Post a link on our
live
catalogs.
CDs.
Yes, Alan's got it up on there now. Check that out. That is the coolest thing. I never in a thousand years thought that
there's a medical bioinformation.
Yeah, and if you read the bioinformation one, it's that particular CD distro has some kind of form thing built into it that allows you to keep records. And not only you build their custom forms that you build, you keep track of them on a web database sort of thing. Not only does it work really good for medical applications, but they also said for like business applications or whatever, you just build, you know, what you want out of it.
Building your database.
And that is just the coolest. I mean, they got some really cool stuff out there I never even knew existed. Right. And I'm like, you know,
Linux?
Yeah, I'm really heavy into Linux. I never heard of some of this stuff. And I'll have to try it out because some of the CD sizes are like, you know, will fit on those mini CDs, the 185 mega.
I say, here's one that's 23 megs.
Yeah,
large.
That's just incredible, man. So, but yeah, I'm definitely going to have to try some of that out. And the rest of you should check that out too, because there's nothing cooler than carrying a Linux distribution around with you in your wallet. And I do know this because I do happen to do that. I have one of those business card CDs with a distribution of Linux on it, and have used it several times. In fact, and it's just it's a cool thing.
I usually burn off the Nopix ones and keep a couple copies at work and like force them on the engineers.
There you go. Force them on the engineers.
Well, you'd be surprised. A lot of them don't pay attention to that. You know, they've got PCXware running, which gets them to log into the server so they can do their simulations, and that's all they really worry about.
Uh-huh.
So to force it and say, here's a CD, you can do everything and not get the blue screen of death.
That's cool.
That we're so famous for having because the company is Windows-based. It's nice to be able to do that.
It's an evil thing.
No evil. No evil.
No evil.
No evil, Linky.
No evil. Dan, did you get your stuff running over there yet?
Yeah, but you know what? It's just not the way I want it to be. You know what I'm saying? I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Well, it's not, how many pieces?
Do you want to try another card?
Yeah. How many pieces are we missing off of that laptop today, Dan?
One, two,
earlier the function
three,
key died
four,
on.
Five, or six. What?
I said earlier the function key died on you.
Well, it's like a loose tooth.
It hurts when you push it.
Does that mean should we tie a string to it and slam the door?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
It's a loose tooth. Should we tie a string to it and slam the door?
Tie a string to that damn airport and slam the door.
There you go.
I don't know. Do I blame the airport or do I blame the laptop?
Well,
the thing is, the laptop connects to the Linksys. For some reason, it's dog slow going through the airport, but right here with my Apple, no problem. I'd be curious. Maybe later we'll set you up with the airport.
Sounds good.
See if you can go through the airport. Or you.
There Wait. We go, right through the airport.
Yeah.
I did finally get the wireless running on this over the weekend. Which wasn't too bad. It's easier than I thought. And
now, what wireless card are you using? Use the same one that we do?
Yeah, the Linksys card.
Linksys version 3. Now, Linuxites out there, remember, don't go out and buy yourself that Linksys wireless card and get the version 4, because if you do, you just bought yourself a $60 paperweight. They do not. The version 4 does not work with Linux right at the moment because of the new Broadcom chipset, right?
Yeah.
Broadcom. It's a no-no. So if you're gonna, if you're looking for, and I highly advocate that you use the Linksys wireless PCM CIA card, but just make sure that you get the version 3. The version 3 runs like a top, man. I haven't had a problem with it. And I don't really have any experience using any other card, so I really couldn't tell you otherwise.
Dude,
what to use.
Look at this.
What are you
Airport,
breaking?
5 feet away.
All right.
Linksys, downstairs, what, 20, 25 feet away?
Right.
I get a lightning-fast connection off the Linksys. The airport, it's just not flying. I don't get it.
So we just unplug it?
So I don't unplug it, throw it out the window. The damn airport that I paid, what, $150 for works for crap. The Linksys router I stole works great.
We are not advocating stealing on the show here.
So it just goes to show crime does pay
sometimes.
No,
it was a legitimate, permanent borrow from work. That's all, right?
You can't use them at work.
Well, that's why it's a permanent borrow instead of just an overnight borrow kind of thing, because they got it and they're not ever going
to
use it.
Well, if somebody listens to the show, maybe they'll know I have it.
And then they'll want it back and sit on the shelf, and then you'll have to borrow it again.
And then I'll just take it again.
All right, what else are we going to talk? Do you guys have anything, you know, before I roll into my giant diatribe about Debian or whatever?
Are you recording a log session?
Yes.
I don't have anything right now. Oh, spam. Spam filtering.
Spam.
I don't know. Was it last week? Was it last week that I talked about throwing Spam Assassin, the newest version, along with Razor? And how well it was working.
Yes.
And it was. It was working great.
Yes.
I think in like 3 or 4 days, I only had one email slip through. And now I'm back to getting 2 or 3 a day slipping through. Which I guess I shouldn't be that picky now, should I? Because about the other 50 of them get filtered.
My RCN account gets like 50 a day.
Archie, but you don't filter it, though.
Anybody just hear that?
Well, I run filters off of...
off of Outlook.
No, Evolution. I have a ton of filters in there. I just like filter from the at symbol before that. You know, everything past the at symbol on, I just put in my filter and just tell it to go right to the delete file.
What are you using to filter?
It's built into the Evolution.
Oh, it is?
So it's just looking at whatever's on the sender or the sender line. Seems to work most of the time.
Or so you say.
Well, yeah, I still get like 3 or 4 to come through that I have to keep adding
says.
In. But it's better than going through and picking out, you know, 50 of them or so that I get every day and just deleting.
That's true. We were doing work for DEF CON over there. What was it, like 198 emails? 190 of them were spam. And that was,
like,
what,
my
over
inbox
a day
in the
or so? Man, oh man, that's just a shame. Not your regular inbox, is it?
Not my regular one, no.
I hope not.
I get most of my spams get tagged here, and they come through with that spam subject line.
Uh-huh.
And I have me a little spam folder that I just do a filter and it throws them in there, and then I can like review them later and see what kind of penis enlargement pills or whatever I need to subscribe to, and I just work from there.
It's nasty stuff.
What, the penis enlargement pills?
No, the spam. No, penis enlargement pills don't work.
No, they don't.
Still can't see much.
There's a guy suing.
Yeah, I read that somewhere. There's some guy suing us for false advertising.
He finally, I think the guy decided, you know, he's tired of the spam, so he ordered a bunch of this stuff. And he's suing them now for false advertisement because they didn't work, so. It's pretty funny.
What do you got to figure, huh? Speaking of working.
I mean, if they did work, like, how many guys, you know what I mean? People would be in a whole different line of work, I think.
Oh, I know. Novell released Beta 3 of GroupWise on Linux.
Okay.
And GroupWise client for Mac OS X. Now, the GroupWise client for Linux, I guess, is incorporated into the GroupWise for Linux, which is a 350 meg download. And for some reason, it was dog slow getting that today. So I got it, and the archive was corrupted. But I managed to get the OS X client, and it's Java-based. The only problem is it's extremely slow starting up, like all Java stuff, apparently. But once it's up and running, it runs pretty well. All the features of the regular GroupWise client for Windows is incorporated into the Java client, except for calendaring right now. Not calendaring, proxy. Proxy is not implemented yet, but it's a good start. Beta 3. You can sign up at Novell site under their public betas, download either one. I'd be really interested to run GroupWise on top of Linux. That would be a nice groupware package.
Okay. If you say so. Dan's creating sound effects again.
What else?
Dan's custom sound.
That's about it.
What else? That's the
big thing in work. I mean, I could talk about my wife's little side business. She made $200 in a week.
Woo! That's pretty good.
Selling used books on Amazon. It's a lot of work, though.
That whole run into the post office all the time.
Yeah, packaging the books up. Get up, package the books, take them to the post office, go to recycling center, come back, list the books, package the books, take them to the post office, go to recycling center, come back. But hey, I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah, but tell them why you're going to the recycling center. This is the best part about the business.
To get the books. Oh, it was great.
She
takes the books, sells them, and the books that don't sell, she takes them down to a used bookstore and sells them there.
Oh, that's good, man.
So she had a sack of books she made $14 on. They went out to lunch this afternoon at the used bookstore.
That's not bad, man.
No, it's not. But it's a whole lot of work. It is a whole lot of work.
Looking up what? Like looking up the ISBN numbers? And
doing that. You got to look up. I mean, it's not that hard to look up the ISBN numbers. But, you know, you put it in there, then you got to list it. Then you have to check your email for the ones that are sold. And when they're sold, you got to print out the shipping labels. You got to put them all together, you know, package them up. And you got to take them to the post office. So it's a lot of busy work. Mm. But it's kind of worth it. It's something you could sit there doing in front of the TV or whatever. Or when you're beating the kids.
Right.
As long as you're not using the books to beat the kids.
Yeah, we send each book gets shipped with a little piece of skin or hair. Right. No. But you got to be careful because the kids like to slobber all over the books.
As well as the dogs.
Yeah.
Kids and your dog chewing on the books before you send them out with their own little quantity of slobber. That's all right.
Well, it makes it a used book.
Yeah.
Well, she
found some rare books in the recycling bin. One that's worth like $45. For an old
I'm in the wrong business, man.
Nancy Drew kind of spin-off mystery from the early 60s. I think it's like even a first printing. I don't know. Dumpster diving.
Yeah, man. Hey, there's something to be said for that. I've dumpster dived quite a bit for some of my old computers and stuff, you know.
Well, apparently a lot of people were dumpster diving in front of your house
this weekend too. That's another story altogether.
Even wait for it to get to the dumpster.
Do we have we got kind of halftime already here. Do we have a song to play today?
Well, you just keep talking. I'll find us a song.
All right. I'm going to fill you in on the dumpster diving story while he's finding us a song. Here's the deal. I have a lot of old computers and stuff that I you know, have collected over the years.
Linkstone for wayward
computers. Yeah, for old stuff like deck stations and things like that and faxes. And they end up in my basement, right? And they sit down there and rot and turn into, you know, hulking skeletons of their former selves and collect spiders and things like that. And eventually this pile has grown so large that it has become necessary to get like a springboard to get to the washer and dryer, you know? You got to do that whole, you know, the flying pheasantins routine. They give you a little trampoline. There you go. And I live in an apartment, right? So this basement is a shared basement between me and my upstairs neighbors. Luckily, there aren't any right now. But so I'm figuring.
Are you the only one in an apartment now?
No, I'm the only one in the whole building right now.
In the whole building?
The other three apartments moved out. I guess one guy's moving in now, but I haven't met him yet. But anyway. This pile is monstrous, and I figured for sure. Right, I figured for sure that my apartment complex is going to be down there, like fixing stuff, and they're going to start complaining because like they can't get around in the basement anymore. Neither can anybody else. So we really need to clean this stuff up. And I spent like the other day just taking all these old computers that I finally broke down. I figured, you know, if I haven't touched it in like 2 years, I'm not ever going to touch it. So I take everything that I haven't touched in 2 years, and I start carting it up.
I apply that philosophy to this room.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing
here. Going up against the wall.
Yeah. So I'm carrying this stuff up there, and like, let me tell you what, like, the dude from Buns of Steel has got nothing on me right now, because carrying, like, 50-pound deck stations up and down a flight of concrete stairs all day long, let me tell you what, I have got Buns of Steel now. But I carried this pile out, and this pile of old, you know, computer bits and pieces. I had a 50-gallon, it's got to be like 60-gallon garbage can full of keyboards and mice and miscellaneous cables and crap. So I get all this stuff up there, and it's a chest-high pile that is as long as a brand-new Ford F-150. And I know this because there's one parked right in front of it. Now, before I even get the stuff all upstairs, all up on the curb, there's like these dudes coming in, scavenging through the computers, you know? And I sat there and watched them for a couple minutes, and this farmer guy rolls up, and he's like 60 years old, and he rolls up in his beat-up pickup truck, and he's grabbing this black-and-white VAX monitor and stuffing it in his truck. And this VAX monitor has got to weigh, In all seriousness, it's got to weigh like 70 pounds, right? It's heavier than hell. You know, it's a big 21-inch black and white monitor with like 85 pounds of lead in it so they don't fall over or something like that. This guy's stuffing in his truck, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, what the hell is this guy going to use that for? So I figured, you know, I just went up and asked him, and I said, you know, I said, hey, man, you want some more stuff? I said, I got more stuff coming upstairs. Don't figure it. I'm going to get rid of as much as I can so that the garbage men don't leave it, right? And I said, what are you going to use that stuff for, man? What are you doing with that? And he said, well, does it work? And I didn't lie. I said, yeah, it does work. He said, well, my son screws around with this stuff. I'm going to take it home for him, and he'll play with it. And I was like, you know, I didn't have a heart to tell this guy who just loaded this 80-pound monitor in the back of his truck that there's no way it's going to work on his kid's Racer PC. You know what I mean? It's just not going to happen. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. You know, hang out for a minute. I'll bring you some more stuff.
You know, he's going to throw that monitor, or he's going to drop that monitor on your porch.
He's going to put it back on your porch.
He's
going
to be listening to the show.
No, son of a gun.
But no, he took all kinds of stuff, too. But the killer part is, like, all the stuff that he took, outside of the Vax monitor, everything else he took was absolute garbage. I mean, just bottom-of-the-barrel junk that I couldn't do anything with. And I can salvage some crap out of PCs, man. But this stuff that I was throwing away was junk. And he took, like, all of that junk. But, like, the working Macintoshes that I had there and the working deck stations and stuff, he left them.
All this.
They were all there. But he took every piece of Racer PC garbage he could get his fingers on. So, and this is all stuff, nothing he took, you know, nothing he took works, with the exception of maybe one video card that I left in. It was like a regular Hercules VGA or something like, you know. But, so, you know, more power to him. That was pretty funny. But the best part was when I got up this morning. Dude, I got up this morning, and there were like 11 things left out there. This chest-high wall of computer parts. And I'm talking, you know, I stacked it up like bricks, man. It was chest-high stack of bricks, as long as that Ford F-150. And I got out this morning, there's like 11 things. The pile was no higher than my shins, and everything was gone. It was hysterical. And if people just take anything, I'm telling you. I can't imagine what's going through somebody's head. Like, they look at this thing, oh, it's a computer, I'll take it home and use it. They find out it's like a, you know, it's a Deck Station 3100. They got to have a, you know, they have to jumper the mouse port on the back and use a VT100 serial monitor, and that coupled with the fact that it doesn't have any disk drives in it, you know, what the hell are they going to do with this thing, you know?
I got me some neat fans out of it.
Yeah, though. Right. There isn't even a fan in it. They have heat sinks. But that was my funny story for the night. That was, it probably is a lot more funny if you were there. You just had to be there.
But you took pictures, right?
I did take pictures, and I put them on my blog. So I didn't get any from this morning, though. I wish I had, because it really, like, the pile was gone, man. It was demolished, which is probably the best part of the whole thing. But and I was worried. You know, I still had more stuff down in my basement to put out, and I was worried that the garbage man would not take such a huge pile of stuff. So I left, like, half of the stuff. The rest of it is just, like, you know, old furniture and crap. But I left all that stuff down in my basement, thinking, like, you know, the garbage men are just going to skip out because the pile is too big and they don't want to do it. So next week I will have another pile, only this time it will be, like, furniture and junk. I should have put it all out, though, because it would all have been gone, I'm sure. But anyway, Dan has a song for us to play, don't you, Dan?
Yep.
Play a song? Okay. Here's our song. We'll be right back.
the dial tone.
We're back.
We're back. And welcome to the Emerald Show. Bam! Wake you right up.
Are we going to get sued now?
Yeah, probably. It's fair use, right?
It's creative use.
It's fair use. If he wants to come on the air over here, he can come on the air over here. It's all right. We'll even teach him some Linux.
I'll give up my chair for him.
Yeah, man. But, you know what? It is becoming harder and harder to do these shows. You know what? And we got all these hecklers. Like, there's these guys like, there's this guy named, his name starts with a P, and he's part of our Linux user group. And evidently, he thinks that he can do a better job than we can over here. You suck!
That's it. Berate the listeners so they run away, and then we have nobody.
Come on the air.
That's the way you go.
You're going to talk like that. Come on the air. We'll hook you up.
Speaking of that, how's the phone hookup coming?
The phone hookup.
Well, we never got a chance
to
try it.
We never got a chance to try it yet.
It is hooked up right now. But
We do need to do some equipment testing kind of thing. We'll probably have to do the whole equipment testing thing when we get around to building Dan a new office so that, three people can fit in here.
What are we going to do, knock down a wall?
Yeah. We're going to start hanging people from the ceiling or something. But no, everybody wants to hear about my misadventures with Debian.
You want to talk about it, or should I talk about Firebird quickly?
Hey, push it off for another week, right? I'll squeeze it in real quick. Almost the whole time I've been running Linux, I've been running my mail server on a Spark Station 20, a Sun Spark Station 20, running Red Hat 6.2 for as long as I can remember. And it has become a problem as of late because you can't get any newer versions of the software for this thing. Red Hat has killed the support for
everything.
Sun line, for its Spark line, right, for everything just about right now. And, you just can't, I can't get anything to run on it anymore, any of the new stuff. And my only alternative, I had a couple alternatives. One was to install BSD on it. OpenBSD, I just don't like. I don't like the installer. I don't like Theo Durant. I think he's a pompous ass.
Don't hold back, Link. Tell us how you feel.
Yeah, really.
Pull
no,
more
well,
punches.
You know, if you ever had any dealings with the guy, you'd agree with me. And he makes no bones about it either. He'll tell you himself. I would put NetBSD on the thing, which I'm sure would run fine. However, I have, I'm a little nostalgic, and I've been running Linux on this mail server forever and ever, and I want to run Linux on the mail server. So my options were very, very limited with that, and I understand there's a Gen 2 port out there that has that's for Sun 4M,
I think.
But the one that's been out there the longest at this point in time now is Debian. So I figured I would get Debian and stick it on there, and it'd be my first real go with Debian to begin with. So I got Debian and I put it on there, and I had a lot of problems installing it. Actually, the installer ran really good. Wasn't too much of a problem, except for they used FDisk instead of CFDisk. I don't know why. It's kind of stupid, but they use FDisk on it, which makes it difficult. And I get through the entire install, and it reboot, and this is like the moment of truth thing that it's, that Debian's installer talks about. The moment of truth, when it reboots, if it reboots in your system, it works. Well, that's great. And it rebooted into my system, and it asked me for the root password, put it in for the first time. And I put the root password in, and then it, did its thing again, and logged out, and asked me to log in again, and of course, I could never get in again, because it would not take my password. And I did it over and over and over and over and over again. And finally, I decided to start booting into the rescue CD and pissing with files on there. And after I had gone through, a bunch of different things, I finally figured out that it was one of two things that I changed. And I'm not sure exactly which one, but the installer, for some reason, when it reboots, decides that by default you're running a VT-102 terminal, and I was not. I was running a VT-100 terminal. So somehow, I think some of the escape sequences or characters got into my password. And it's that and or the in the init tab. My init tab was set up for VT-102. So when I went in the last time, I changed the init tab to VT-100 for the console. And I also went through and deleted the root password out of the Etsy password and Etsy shadow, which, of course, let me reboot and jump right in with no password and then set the password and everything worked fine after that. But that was a real pain in the butt kind of thing. And if any Debian developers are out there, please, please fix the installer so that it asks you for your preferred terminal emulation. That was the problem in a nutshell right there. Also, please put, please get CFDisk running on that thing, because FDisk is just a pain in the butt. Like, there is no bigger way in the world to confuse the living hell out of a non-Linux person than to sick FDisk on them. You know, when you get that little thing, FDisk, and all it says is M for menu. You know what I mean?
M for menu.
That's it. That's all it says. Like, that's the best way in the world to confuse the hell out of... Luckily, I, know my way around FDisk a little bit, but still, it's a pain in the butt.
Now, I think there's a new installer coming out for the next version of...
Yeah, Moondogs is... Sarge? What is it?
Sarge.
Sarge, or something like that?
Yeah, that
like
was the one I was trying to remember the name.
Boy, I hope it works, man. If it worked, it'd be slicker than, snot on a doorknob, man. That's the biggest holdback I see with Debian right now is the installer really... Well, and there are parts that it really runs well. You know what I mean? But there are parts of it that just are terrible. So I'd like to see them get the installer fixed up and running a little bit better and do away with that. They have two, at the very end of the install, they have these two apt-get kind of things going on. I cannot remember.
Task select and...
task cell, and there was one other one.
Yeah,
Now, I believe task cell is the first one, and that's the one that I use, and that's the one that has a really broad categories, right? Categories like what kind of server stuff do you want? Do you want Unix server things? Do you want, do you want desktop applications? That kind of thing. And I did that one, and that needs some fixing too, because I picked Unix server stuff. And it went through the apt-get and got all my packages, and it didn't install SSH. I haven't run into a Unix server outside of Skull in years that does not come with SSH installed. But that's a different. It's not hard to get stuff installed afterwards.
Deselect is the other one.
Deselect is the other one. That's the second one, right, where it gives you the every option in the world. The one that everybody, yeah. even the developers in Debian. Even the developers in Debian tell you to stay away from that one. So why the hell they include it in the installer is beyond me.
On a couple times that I've installed Debian, I haven't used either one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I just get it up and running and then just...
I think that's your
just
best.
Just use
bet.
That apt-get to get the packages
I
get a minimum system up.
Yeah, I really think that is your best bet. In fact, when I selected just the server services that I did choose, it was just a basic system after that anyway, so... So I was good, but I eventually, like I said, I got the system up and running. I was all happy and everything. I got my Woody at 3:00 in the morning. Read it on my blog. Debian Woody, and I'm up and running at 3:00 in the morning. I'm looking around on it. First of all, it doesn't have SSH on it at all. And I did pick the Unix server packages. No SSH. No telnet either, which is, it's on my internal network. I want to be able to tell. Because if you've ever tried to SSH to a Spark server before, especially the old ones like the 20s that I run, you run SSH 2 on those things, mm-hmm. and good God, it takes 5 minutes. To connect to the thing. Now, you can specify SSH1 and go in. It's a little bit faster, but it's faster yet to telnet in. And, if it's sitting on my internal network and no one can get to it but me, why the hell not? So I have to put had to put telnet on so I can get to it real quick. And I also put SSH on so that when I'm carousing around from other places, I can get to it securely and all that fun stuff. And then, mind you, I said that this was going to be my new mail server. So, what I had to do was I installed FetchMail, first of all, so I can grab my mail off of my provider's server. FetchMail pulled right on there. But here's the fun part right here. I wanted to, and this is the one, like, everybody knows that most of us guys here at the Tech Show run Slackware. There's a good reason for that, okay? This is the reason. You've heard us go into this diatribe before about RPM hell, you know, where you start, like, this Red Hat stuff or the Mandrake, you go in, you install the RPMs, you get caught up in these dependency lists and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, I have come to find out that Debian has its own little quirk. And Debian has some kind of a license foo thing going on. If you check out Debian, they're always toting themselves as GNU Linux, right? They want to be like the perfect GNU sort of package, and they're all concerned with their licenses and stuff. And I figured that, you know, this is not going to be a problem for me, because during the apt-get thing, they ask you all these questions, like, do you want non-free packages? Do you want packages from outside the United States? And I answered yes to all of them. Yeah, I want everything, man. But for years and years, I've been using Unix. Years and years. Every single Unix operating system I've been on, I have been able to get my mail in a text format. And you might say, well, you can do that on Debian too. Yes, you can. But I have been able to get my mail in a particular text format using a particular program. That program is Pine. Pine is on every damn distribution I have ever seen of Linux. And it's, you know, I even have access to Pine on Solaris and on SCO and on HPUX and AIX and you name it, right? You can use Pine on all of these things. Now, when I installed Debian, Debian did not want me to be able to use Pine. It put up a heinous fight. Because Pine is not free software. Even though I said, you know, I specified, I said, I want to be able to install non-free software. It would not install Pine. This pisses me off. Right? Like this one program is like the bane of Debian's existence or something. I had to jump through severe hoops to get this thing installed. Now, I will mention that I probably could have just downloaded the damn source package, you know, directly from University of Washington and installed it, and it probably would have worked. But I wanted to find out, you know, what the deal was with Debian, and I wanted to do it the Debian way. So, it, you know, and it's barking, Debian's barking about license restrictions, and I get to this website, and it tells me I have to apt-get only source the build dependencies for Pine, and then I have to go and install the dpackage development tools, and then I had to install GCC. Yes, that's right. The default Debian install does not even come with a compiler. Reminds me of my old Red Hat days. Then I had to apt-get only the source with the build command for Pine, and I guess what that does is that grabs the Pine sources that they do have. They just won't build them because they want to be nasty about it. They do have these, and they have their own specific Debian patches that you build into this thing so that it works good with the Debian system. However, they won't build it and, like, give you the binary package so you can apt-get it. So anyway, I went and did that. And then you have to install the packages that it builds for you, the binary packages, using dpackage. And even then, it bitches about stuff being not... It bitches about Pine saying it's not configured. And the reason it's not configured is because it's missing some MIME types files. So after you get all that crap installed, then you have to go out and apt-get install the MIME type stuff so that it quits bitching about Pine not being configured right. And it also finishes the install for... one of the other binary packages is built during that. But man, what a pain in the butt! And the reason that they irritates me so is that, like, this pine is from the University of Washington. Everybody has pine, right? Pine works on everything. Everybody uses pine. Pine is a program older than the hills. There is no problem with the licensing with Pine. They don't care. It's been free to every Unix in the world forever and ever and ever, right?
Now, according to Moondog here, it's not freeware.
Just because he's a Debian person, you know? It's free, man. I've been using it for free for years. It's not a problem to use Pine. They're not going to bitch at you for using Pine. If they were going to bitch at you, then you guys wouldn't, you know, the Debian people wouldn't have the damn sources on their servers, which they do. So, and here's the killer part, right? The same University of Washington puts out one of the other packages that I wanted to install today, which was an IMAP server, okay? This is the default Debian IMAP server, is the WU IMAPD. That's the same place, man. Those are the same guys that put out Pine. The same guys that put out Pine. Now, if you install WU IMAPD, you know what it does? You do apt-get install, it goes out and installs it. It's already compiled, the whole thing. It's from the same guys that do Pine. Why can't they just do it with Pine, you know? I just couldn't figure it. It nailed me. It drove me crazy, man. But at any rate, like even with the problems that I did have with that, and it was a little bit frustrating, trust me. I will have to say this. I find that the apt-get package management on Debian is pretty slick. It works pretty good. The Spark server that I'm running, my
apt-get almost makes up for the fact that it's so hard
to
install.
Yeah, it does. It almost makes up for the fact that it's so hard to install. Now, if they would fix this, like the little licensing restriction quirk thing, if they would fix that, like, so when I filled out all that crap in the beginning, yes, I want non-free packages, yes, I want, if they actually used that information properly and just went out and got the crap that I wanted without ever bitching at me about anything again, that would be most cool, and it would be done, you know? But I do like apt-get. It has worked really good. I really appreciated the fact that, like, if there were a couple of questions to set something up, like the IMAP server or something like that, it actually asked me the configuration questions while it was doing the install for me. Really, really easy to do. Makes this Spark that I'm running on. This is a Spark 20 with an SM50 processor and 964 megs of RAM. 90-something megs of RAM. Something like that. And it's got like a quarter of the RAM of my other, I think it's 64. Quarter of the RAM of my real mail server that I'm going to install this on eventually. And the thing is just running. It runs like a top, man. I love it, you know? I'm happy to see Linux on it. I'm thrilled to death that Debian is still doing this, you know, still supporting the old Spark 4M products, because they're really useful stuff. I mean, you know, I still use my stuff every day, and it's pretty cool. So there are some advantages of running Debian. I don't know what getting X running on it or anything like that is like, but I did really appreciate when I did finally get Debian running on this system, and I went back, and this computer only has like a gig hard drive, right? I went back and did a disk-free on it right after my initial install, right? I did a disk-free on it, and check this out. The entire operating system, the entire Linux operating system was running on 127 megs off the hard drive. That's now, that is sweet, man. I don't care what anybody else says. That's sweet. That reminds me of back in the original Linux days when I was first starting up, like running on 386s and 486s, you know, 100 megs of disk space you're running the whole stuff on. That was cool. But I would expect, folks, for you to hear me come up with some Debian rants and raves and stuff like that. a bit later. But for now, I'm pretty happy with it. After I, you know, after the few problems I did have, it seems to be running really, really well, and I'm happy with the size of the install. That was pretty cool. But anybody else have anything to add?
Well, I was just over at the Washington University site looking at the license for Pine, mm-hmm. and it is a very kind of confusing license. And I guess the gist of it is you can distribute the source so long as you do not modify it. If you need to modify, you can distribute patches.
Well, maybe
patches.
That's their problem then, because they have patches.
Well, you can distribute patches along with the source, but you can't modify the source. And then there is a redistribution clause that says you can distribute it in free or at-cost distributions by nonprofit concerns and free-of-charge distributions by for-profit concerns, or inclusion in a CD-ROM collection of free-of-charge shareware or non-proprietary software for which a fee may be charged for the packaged distribution. So I guess
Debian doesn't violate any of that stuff.
Well, no, wait. Now we go to the next thing. Redistribution of binary versions is further constrained by license agreements for incorporated libraries from third parties. For example, LDAP and GSS API.
Mm-hmm.
So are those libraries included with the source of Pine that further puts restrictions on them?
I don't remember seeing any libraries that it downloaded when I had to build the Pine packages. I assume those libraries are already there.
No, but I mean, are they in Pine? As a source and stuff, those libraries in the Pine sources?
I don't know.
Maybe that's... I mean, it's kind of a very...
I don't know.
Well, when you compare it to the GPL, it's a lot more limiting.
But either way, like, my whole point of this thing was, like, the same guys put out this IMAP server, IMAPD.
Right.
And that... they have in binary, okay? I just apt-get the thing, sucked it right down, it was running, it was awesome. And this is even like the old IMAPD server that everybody's saying, no, don't use this anymore because it sucks, and, you know, use these other ones that you have to run MySQL on and all this other crap to get running. I'm not running that crap. I just want a simple IMAPD server. So I suck this thing down, and it's running like 2 minutes later. You know, I don't have to touch a thing. But Pine, from the same guys, you got to piss with Pine for like 40 hours to get the damn thing to run. And I just can't. And what killed me is, like, you know, Slackware, Pine is on there, man. It runs. You type in Pine, you got Pine. Red Hat, type in Pine, got Pine. Mandrake, got Pine. It's not a problem. What else? Skull. I can get Pine on Skull. Not a problem, you know?
Windows.
I can get, yeah, you can get it on Windows, man. You get binary distribution for Windows. You can get it on, you know, HPUX. You can get it on the AIX. You can get it on Solaris. You can get it on whatever the hell you want, except for Debian. Debian, they don't want you to have Pine. You know? And you know, that's cool. If you don't want us to have Pine, then, like, fix Mutt or something so that Mutt actually works. You know? Do something, man. But I gotta have, you know... I need my good old Pine.
You gotta have your text.
Yeah, man. It's a fix. I gotta have my Pine fix. If you've been reading your email on Pine for like 4 years, when you get your mail off another server, you wanna read it by Pine.
Pine.
You know? You just get comfortable like that. And that was my, you know, that and the fact that it assumed that I was running a VP102 terminal, which screwed the crap out of my passwords on the install. Those are my two biggest complaints, followed up tightly by the fact that they use FDisk and not CFDisk. If they could get that stuff fixed, man, it would be a snap, a piece of cake. And that's just for the server stuff, because, like, I haven't actually ever put Debian on something that I would use X on yet. I might be, you know, at some point in time, but...
better hurry up, because they might not include X anymore. The license changed.
Yeah, right, the license changing on X. I heard that, and Debian's going to cut that out next. It's going to bark at you. You may not watch graphics on this Debian system. See our Pine license, no. But anyway, that's about it for my story for today, everybody. We probably ought to cut this off because it's like 11 after already.
Yeah, because you just hoarded.
I'm rattling
the
on.
End there. Speaking of Debian.
I'm rattling on.
I still have yet. Dude, I Slacks.
The CD,
live
yes.
distribution of Slackware on a CD.
Right.
It's pretty good. It's not as polished as Nopix.
Oh.
Doesn't do a lot of the auto configure automatically at boot, but I had no problem getting it running and starting up X on it. But they bring the scripts. They have scripts that allow you to take any distribution, install that distribution on a hard drive,
mm-hmm.
configure it the way you want it, and then run the scripts, and it makes a live CD for you. Now, they recommend Slackware, of course, because
it's better, yeah.
But yeah. It's it just looks really cool, and as soon as I get that system, I can find a system to install it on. I want to try that out.
Yes, sir.
And then I'll do my Debian install after that.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's it for tonight, Alan. You want to finish it up?
Sounds good to me. I'm out of talking, so.
Link, anything else?
For me, guys. I'm done for the night.
Well, thank everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening. Guys, have a great week coming up, and we'll hope to talk to you again on our next edition of the Tech Show.
Now, hopefully, we can close out of here without having any crashes, and that would mean we had a fairly smooth show, except for right at the beginning, but that doesn't count because the show wasn't going on yet.
Yes.
Yet.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
All right. Thank you very much for listening, and here's our final theme.
Yes, good night.
Good night, everybody.